And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Yo, yo, welcome to another episode of the Forum Club. I'm your co-host, Jovan Buha, joined in person for a special in-person edition by Bill Oram. We're coming to you live from my hotel room in Copley Place. Bill, how was the flight over that I was also on?
Yeah, I mean, listen, Jovan, I just want to say, this is a historic day in the history of the Forum Club. Never before have we recorded a podcast episode face-to-face like this. Usually I can sort of look at my phone while you talk and kind of tune out. But like right now, I'm very locked in on what you're saying because we are right here. So, you know, listen, we're here in Boston, Lakers-Celtics on Friday. You know, the continuation of a road trip that started last night in Milwaukee. Lakers lost, probably somewhat predictably, without LeBron James, the shorthanded Lakers, who are trying to get through this stretch until they get LeBron back, whenever that'll be. But flight was good. I had almonds and coffee. You?
I had almonds and coffee. Two peas in a pod.
Teammates.
But what about your Uber ride over?
Yeah, listen, our friend Brad Turner from the LA Times was tweeting through it. But I mean, listen, Logan Airport, very confusing Uber setup, in as much as if it even has an Uber setup, because we couldn't find it. You had a little bit of a verbal scrape with an Uber driver who couldn't tell us where the Uber pickup was. We ended up in a taxi. It must be a great taxi union here. The cab lobby is very strong in Boston, which, I mean, that seems like a very Boston thing. But yeah, what do we think about these Lakers?
So Lakers are 8-8, 24th in offense and 15th in defense, just as we predicted. Basically similar to last season, obviously worse defensively, but where the defense has been better than the offense. As you said, 4-6 without LeBron, 4-2 with him. I think the biggest thing, and we've talked about this on this podcast, we've written about it, it is hard to gauge where this team is at right now with no LeBron, with Trevor out, with Kendrick out, two guys who project to have big roles on this team, and just being so early in the season and them still developing chemistry. But I think big picture, something that I have been impressed by, you just wrote about last night, Talen Horton-Tucker coming out with these three games. And
no question.
I think he's been someone that Laker fans have obviously been high on. But I know from talking to other people around the league, other reporters, there's kind of been this, he has this sheen on him because he's a Laker. And, you know, he's the next Kuzma, and that he's getting overhyped. And he gets the big contract this offseason. Lakers make the difficult decision to let Alex Caruso go, not re-sign him, and basically prioritize Talen. And thus far, he's looked really, really good. And it's not just been the offense. I think it's been the defense as well. But offensively, three games, 17-plus, averaging 23 a night, back-to-back 20-point games. Like, he's been at a level offensively we have not seen from him consistently. And I think could be a really big part of this team moving forward with the way he's played so far.
Yeah, it's interesting. He made the point last night that he had not played 82 games yet in the NBA. And you go back and look and you count his playoff appearances. That was his 80th game. So, you know, really young guy, still 20 years old, in his third year. Frank Vogel said something interesting about him. And we know Frank likes him, and we understand the skill set that Talen brings, right? Like, I mean, he's great off the dribble, getting to the rim, has kind of an uncanny knack for finishing at the rim, is able to get it up usually off the backboard and get it to drop. So, you know, obviously something they don't really have outside of Russell Westbrook, who, by the way, has almost the uncanny ability to not finish at the rim. So, you know, we understand that Talen is valuable to this team, but more, so much more so without LeBron. I mean, they really had a kind of a difficult time scoring and really kind of attacking and really, you know, getting any offensive flow in some of these games without LeBron. I think Talen has really sort of amped that up. But here's what Frank said that I thought was interesting. He was asked if Talen is kind of making a case to stay in the starting lineup when LeBron gets back. And Frank said, yeah, that there is a case. And I would be curious, Jovan, to know if you buy that as something that we could actually see. Because coming into the year, we spent a lot of time talking about that starting two-guard position. And I think we both sort of landed on it either being Wayne Ellington or Kent Bazemore, depending on how much defense you wanted at that position. But primarily because you needed three-point shooting. You need a guy who can defend, yes, but also space the floor. And Talen, through his first 2 years, hasn't really been a floor spacer. He's a below-average three-point shooter. His best offensive skill is getting to the rim, obviously, like I was saying. Has Talen showed enough from three? I think you're looking at it right now. What's he shooting? He's shooting
40% on 6.7 attempts per game.
Yeah, I know he's getting them up.
That's to me unsustainable. The 40%, for sure. I would be shocked if he shot that well.
What if he shoots 34%?
That's good. And to me, you just said it. The 6.7 attempts is where, one knock with Talen, it was not just the poor shooting, which I think entering the season, he was a sub 30% career three-point shooter. It was the lack of attempts and the lack of, you'd see he'd come in, he'd miss a three, and then the next time he's open from three, he would pass up that look or force a drive, throw a wild shot up, turn the ball over. And the fact that he is now confident enough in his shot to take seven a game, I don't think that will sustain either. But again, it's more the process of he looks more confident. Not just from beyond the arc, but I think off the dribble, he's been flashing more step back jumpers, fadeaways, those types of things. So I think Talen, we kind of saw it in some of the training camp videos. His shot looked better. Yeah. He was making all these threes, and you never know if that's going to translate. It always, everyone improves over the offseason, right? Especially from beyond the arc. But to me, it looks legitimate to the extent that I think he can shoot 34%. Yeah. I think he can maybe even shoot 35%. And if he does that over the course of the rest of the season, that to me is either the Lakers starting shooting guard or their sixth man.
Yeah, and I think I still probably tend to sixth man just because I like the idea of him out there with Carmelo Anthony. Mm-hmm. I think those two guys really complement each other pretty well. But, what's interesting about Talen is like right now he's doing this, really when there's nothing to lose, right? Mm-hmm. Like the Lakers are not supposed to be they are supposed to be winning games without LeBron, but nobody's going to blame Talen if they don't win games. I mean, it falls on Russ. It falls on AD. So it's really a soft landing spot for Talen to come out and kind of showcase his offseason improvement, get shots up. Would it look different with LeBron? Like, would he be as aggressive offensively if it's LeBron James on the floor and like you are, your championship expectation Lakers? I would submit that Talen Horton Tucker, that might be an issue for some guys. Talen has just not shown any trepidation in his career so far. I think especially, once he got kind of through the early stages of his first year when he wasn't playing, he was in the G League, came in that Houston series and made an impact in game two against the Rockets. And then, really has continued to evolve. And I just feel like mindset wise, when we talk about like kind of swagger, like he's a guy who is not afraid of the moment. So if he is playing with LeBron, if he is playing in that starting lineup, I think that he will be a guy who's not intimidated by that moment. That said, I think I lean Talen off the bench. Balance. Yeah. I want balance with the starting lineup. Not just your five best players. I want balance.
I think so. I think...
Because you get back into... Sorry to cut you off, but like this is the reason we had an issue with it from the beginning was the spacing. And you have three guys who are at their best with the ball in their hands. And it's not just can Talen play more off the ball. Like he's going to want to find opportunities with the ball in his hands to attack. And every time he's attacking, you're taking that away from LeBron James and Russell Westbrook, who are two of the best in the world at it. So I think take a guy who's also very skilled at it and put him in some different looks so you have that weapon kind of on the floor at all times.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Well, I think this brings up a segue into the second thing that I've been encouraged by through this recent stretch, even with the Lakers basically going 500 over the last few games. The starting lineup and going smaller with AD, it's something that we talked about a bunch.
Thought it was going to happen from the beginning.
Basically, everybody, that's kind of been the thing in Lakerland for the past couple of years is, you look at the Lakers' numbers with AD at the five versus JaVale, Dwight, yeah. Mark, Drummond, Trez. It's better with AD at the five. It has been for three straight years. And I think the Trevor Ariza injury, as we've discussed, affected that. And had Trevor been healthy, he's probably the starting power forward. And the Lakers are small from day one. He goes out. They don't have, with Talen also out, they don't have that wing depth, that wing flexibility to go smaller. But one thing I'll be interested in longer term, do they stick with the starting lineup? Because Frank has continued to hedge. He says, right now, this is our lineup. This is something that offensively we're looking at in terms of the spacing. He just said Russ had his best game of the season against Milwaukee.
Yep.
And he has
15 assists, 3 turnovers.
Frank did a double take. And my favorite part of that was Frank was like, 15 assists, 3 turnover, and he like stopped himself. Like, am I getting this right? He looks at the stat sheet and he's like, 15 assists and 3 turnovers. And like,
Russ's assist to turnover ratio on a nightly basis is such an adventure, because it was last week. I can't remember which game it was, but Anthony Davis kind of did the same thing. He's like, Russ is playing a lot better. He's doing a good job of keeping the turnovers down, like we've been talking to him about. Then he looked at the stat sheet and goes, oh, well, he had eight tonight. Never mind. But, he was trying to keep him down. But, he had 8. So it's like the stat sheet is like always like this, like gamble for people with the Lakers.
But I think two factors. Like, I think if the Lakers are staying with the bigger lineup, I think there is more of an argument for Talen off the bench. But if they stay with the smaller lineup, LeBron returns. You have to think he starts at the four and moves Melo down. Or maybe they go LeBron-Melo. But I don't think, Melo is the guy that we were just talking about as arguably the favorite for sixth man of the year. Like, he is someone that has thrived in those second units and really been a difference maker off the bench. Frank has talked about him checking in, the energy that brings and him favoring that. So I feel like in an ideal world, the Lakers want Carmelo Anthony coming off the bench. Yes. Right now, it's just Trevor's out, LeBron's out.
It's triage. Whatever you can do just to survive right now.
Sure.
Absolutely.
And so I look at just LeBron comes back, Trevor comes back, Kendrick comes back. If Trevor can't provide much, which we have no assurance of at this point. I mean, this was a guy who was basically out of the league a year ago.
Well, same with Kendrick Nunn, by the way. Not the age thing, but we haven't seen or heard anything about Kendrick Nunn. Yeah. Another guy we expected a lot from this year. He's not on this road trip even. Yeah. And that doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily foreboding, but you've got a guy who is not close at all and he's staying in LA to rehab. That's not a great sign either.
So we don't know what to expect from Trevor, and I just wonder if, again, ideally your starting lineup is AD, Trevor, LeBron, player X,
right,
and Russ. If Trevor can't go for a while, I almost feel like you have to kind of start Talen as one of those other two perimeter guys. Because I think one thing that has also kind of happened now is, by the shifting of the starting lineup, DeAndre Jordan is out of the rotation. I know he played a few minutes outside in Milwaukee, but for all intents and purposes, he's the third center. And Kent Bazemore has lost his starting spot and is on the outside looking in. He also got a few minutes last night, but I think that was a more of a desperation thing from Frank. So I just kind of wonder, if you're not starting Talen and Kendrick's still out for however long,
right,
who are you putting in there? Because Kent, I think, has lost some of the faith from the coaching staff. Wayne is, I think, played well, but again, not a great defender. And I think someone you can kind of pick on. And, yeah. and we've seen that with Frank going with Avery Bradley, he wants a defender next to Russ that can handle either backcourt spot. So unless Avery Bradley continues to start, which to me is a mistake, the on-off numbers with Avery have been awful. And, you know, I think there's a reason he was cut from the Warriors, 15th spot. I'm looking at Talen as like it might, similar to kind of how Melo is starting right now out of triage, as you said.
Yeah.
I think Talen might have to ultimately just kind of take that spot unless Trevor could come back.
Yeah.
But even then, I don't know who that fifth starter is, because I don't think it's Avery long term personally.
Yeah.
And no. And if it's not Kent, are you going what? Like, I don't know who you go there. So that's just something I'm thinking of, like, longer term.
Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong. I mean, like, we are sort of, the thing we said about this roster coming into the year was not all of the guys they signed are going to pan out. You know, not all these players that came on minimum contracts are going to hit. And, you know, so far, you know, Trevor Ariza's hurt. Kent Bazemore has been disappointing. You know, Kendrick Nunn, not on a minimum, but, you know, we haven't seen him. We don't know. You know, Talen Horton-Tucker, and Melo's obviously been great, especially for what they've asked of him to do. And especially when, you know, he was coming off the bench. But, you know, Talen's the guy who's kind of really outperformed expectations so far. And I think, you know, you want to reward that too. So I think that he'll, you know, continue to have a big role. I think that the Lakers are still very hopeful about Trevor Ariza. I want to say when he first went out, they said 8 weeks, and that was early October. So we could potentially be nearing something.
It was a reevaluate. Like,
but like, that, I don't, but like,
the
I
Lakers
don't
injury
know.
Stuff has been a little weird this right. season.
With yeah.
The...
Well, not just this season, but I don't, I don't, I would like, listen, I've not seen or heard anything that would indicate that he is going to be on the floor by, like, you know, December 5th or anything like that. But, hopefully we'll be getting a little bit of clarity on him in the next couple of weeks. And that would help sort of inform these conversations about what those lineups are going to look like.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Austin Reeves.
Oh, for sure. Yeah,
potential.
Yeah,
great, good, I mean, he might just be the answer there as the fifth starter. Like, I don't think that's...
Well, it's not crazy because...
Crazy.
So before Austin Reeves hurt his knee, he was actually supposed to start. It's a knee for him, right?
No, I think it's hamstring.
Hamstring, okay. That's right.
The Lakers injury list is pretty long, and right, it's hard to keep track of.
You get confused. If I pull up his game log, whichever game it was that he first was out for, the Lakers were leaning toward moving Austin Reeves into the starting lineup so to facilitate going small. And then he's out. Rondo was out for that game, so they stayed big for one more game. And then the next game was when you saw them, you know, move Melo in and really go small and kind of commit. So the Lakers, internally at least, have had some, you know, willingness to start Austin Reeves. I mean, really unexpected, right? Who saw that coming when they first signed him to a two-way contract back in August, but or in July? But he's been good. And again, we're talking about balance. We're not saying he's one of your five best players, but you need somebody out there who can defend, knock down shots. You know, he's got some skill.
He might be one of their five best. I've been impressed. I mean, he's been good.
He's been really good. Like, I'm not trying to downplay what he's doing. Yeah. But again, you don't just want to say, you know, that's why you don't just play. You don't just say, yeah. So I feel like Austin's a good candidate there too. If this team gets healthy, or if he gets healthy and Trevor Ariza still isn't.
And then we talked about a couple of positives here. I think Talen's play and the Lakers finally committing to the smaller starting group. What about negatives? Because I think one thing for me, and this might be a simplified way of looking at it, but for the Lakers to be 4-6, they've had so many injuries, right? So it's hard to parse that out. And as we discussed, it's a lot of vet minimum guys. So you don't have high expectations necessarily.
Yep.
But to me, to have Anthony Davis, universally a top 10, if not top 5 when he's at his best player, Russell Westbrook, who, I don't know, top 50, top 40. Like, I don't know where you put Russell Westbrook. He's top 50, I think, at worst. I wish you guys could have seen Bill's face when I said that. But it's hard to rank him. It's hard to rank him. So, but like, he, you know, a plus in some regard.
Well, I mean, listen.
I'm just saying, AD and Russ against a relatively lottery heavy schedule should be better than 4-6 without LeBron.
And listen, that includes two losses to Oklahoma City. And we were talking about this before we started recording. You had you know, you have three wins that were in overtime that could have, you know, I mean, with any overtime game, I mean, you're just, you know, a razor's edge away from going the other way. So, I mean, credit to them for closing out those games, Charlotte, Miami, San Antonio, but they were, those could very easily be losses also. I mean, so, you know, the pendulum and swing.
The fourth San Antonio game also went down. I mean, they were within 2 points with two minutes left.
Right. So. I mean, the Lakers have not been impressive in these 10 games. I think that would probably be the simplest way to say it. Because you could argue, well, you know, they win one of those games against OKC, they're 5-5, and that's, you know, and that's better. Or if, you know, but like, so it could go either way. But the fact is, they just haven't been impressive, and they are not even, they're not even competitive against good teams. Like,
if you told me the
Bucks game was entertaining and it was good. Giannis carved up AD, like completely destroyed him. You know, I never was particularly, you know, I was never really skeptical that the Lakers, that the Bucks were going to pull that out. It was kind of close throughout. But I mean, that was really kind of the only time we've seen them, you know, I guess Miami also, but Jimmy didn't play the second half. You know, Chicago, they were just not competitive. And I think that has been sort of kind of what you expect from them against good teams without LeBron, which again, this is sort of the LeBron James story, but it's like, okay, LeBron, you need to come back and do it all again, because that's what every team you've ever been on needs you to do.
And part of the reason why the Lakers brought in Russell Westbrook was
to avoid that.
For this, you know, LeBron misses some time with an injury. Well, now we have Russ. We should be better than five. You know, like, I feel like if you told me entering the season, and of course, there, you know, alternate universe, that there's so many things that are different. You know, the roster construction is probably different, that they have a different player in place of LeBron. But if you told me a team has Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook, that in my head is a 40, you know, pencil them in for 45 wins, maybe even more, depending on AD stepping up as like that number one guy. And for this team to be 4-6, and really, again, none of those wins were convincing. And they could have gone 6-4, beaten OKC twice, but I mean, they could have gone 0-10. Like, you know, like, you can play that game either way. And for them to really not have a convincing win without LeBron, that is like, that's a neon sign to me that, you know, like, this team really, I mean, this team, again, really needs LeBron to be competitive. And you just kind of hope that bringing in Russ would address that. He's done it elsewhere. Like, he made Washington, you know, he helped Washington be a playoff team. Houston was a contender, you know, theoretically.
Right.
But it's just, it's not happening so far.
So far, and I thought this was interesting last night, maybe other people knew this, but I dived into the numbers just a little bit last night as part of the story you and I did off the game. And I'm curious what you make of this. Like, obviously the Lakers are going to be worse without LeBron, right? They have a positive, and again, we're still such small sample size, especially for the games with LeBron. He's only played six games. But Lakers have a positive net rating with LeBron James on the floor. You know, like, you know, this is, you know, games he's missed, games he hasn't. But like, you know, when he's on the floor, the Lakers have a positive net rating of, you know, about 3 points per 100 possessions. When he, without him, it's -5. When the Lakers have Russell Westbrook, but no LeBron James, or when LeBron James doesn't play, you would think that the Lakers should be better with Russell Westbrook on the court than not. But if LeBron's not out there and Russ is, they're actually worse than when neither LeBron or Russ are on the floor, which to me, again, this can change. I mean, it's so early, but like, so far, Russell Westbrook, it's what the eye test tells you.
Yeah.
Russell Westbrook has not made the Lakers better when LeBron James is not out there.
Which defeats
the purpose of trading,
which is a $45 million problem a year. You know, so yeah, I mean, I think that's one thing. I think the second thing, which is kind of tied into this, is like, this team is 8-8 through 16 games. LeBron might play tomorrow in Boston, which would obviously be a welcome return for the team.
And it just changes the texture of everything, right?
It does.
It's like, so much of what we've been talking about with this team kind of throughout is kind of with this cloud of is LeBron healthy? And if LeBron gets back out there, it's almost like hitting reset on the season. And it's almost kind of fitting, if he does come back in Boston, that it is with the team at 8-8. Like, it's kind of like starting over.
Well, so what I was going to say, though, is that they're 8-8. They're currently the eighth seed. They're technically tied for seventh, but Portland has the tiebreaker over them currently. Like, this was the part of the schedule
they are one game better than the Thunder right now.
Which is, I mean, we could stop the podcast. Like, I just think this, like when we looked at, you know, we wrote about the first 15 games, mm-hmm. we were like, this team's going to go 13-2, sure. 12-3, 11-4 at war. Like this is a cupcake schedule, right. You know, home heavy, a bunch of lottery teams. Like this is, yeah, we looked up maybe at Portland as like a likely loss,
right.
And maybe they lose to one of the, you know,
I mean,
Phoenix or Golden State or whatever. Like
Warriors and Phoenix to start was going to be a challenge.
I thought they'd split those two,
and then Portland. Other than that,
Miami, I thought would be but again, 12-whatever for them to be, you know, 8-7 during that stretch. Now be 8-8, and let's say LeBron comes back tomorrow. I mean, you got Boston, which. Yeah. I'm pulling it up right here. They're 7-8. They've been kind of struggling a bit, but and I was gonna say good at home, 2-3 at home, so not good at home. So maybe, I mean, they're probably maybe favored in that game, but
listen, Detroit, the teams that they're playing the rest of this road trip are not world beaters, right? The Knicks at the end of it, like, are gonna be motivated. Obviously, the Knicks, you know, are over 500 right now, but I mean, listen, Celtics, Bucks, who just beat them last night, Pacers, all under 500. So, I mean, this does feel like a chance where, like, if the Lakers were, you know, do have a healthy LeBron, you know, they have a healthy AD, they have a healthy Russ, that should be enough to win some games on this trip. But we haven't seen the other signs that would give you confidence that that's what's going to happen.
And that's, I guess, I feel like they're already in a hole. And they need to get out of it sooner than later. And that's, I guess, was my larger point of that. I thought they would start with the cushion and then potentially as the schedule got harder, deal with some more, the wrinkles that come up and different stuff. But now it's like they're still going to have Kendrick come in and have to find a place for him. They're going to have Trevor come in. They're going to have LeBron come back.
Yeah, there's going to be growing pains. And then, that's why you want to bank wins. That's why, and that's what we talked about.
Coming and that's where the Thunder loss. I mean, the Thunder losses really are costly in that regard. Like, if this team was 10-6,
we'd feel very different.
I think we're having a different conversation. And you could say, like, you know, the process of okay, well, they should have won both of those games, and you know, maybe that doesn't matter as much. But the West is so jumbled this year. You know, you still have. I mean, I think it's a 9-team race for the top 8 seeds.
Yeah.
So I don't think the Lakers' playoff odds are in jeopardy, but I think looking at Golden State at 12-2 and Phoenix at 11-3, Utah at 9-5, like they're already chasing those teams to get a top 6 seed and avoid the play-in, and that's
which is with the exception of the year the Lakers won the title, right? They were kind of the one seed throughout. You know, they had the benefit of going into the bubble. You know, they had to win one game in the bubble just to, you know, lock up the one seed, and then they could kind of cruise. You know, they could tinker, they could you know, tailing out a lot of minutes then. You know, the Lakers in LeBron's 3 other years here haven't had any kind of luxury like that. They haven't had that cushion that you're talking about. So last year, obviously, there were the injuries, so the Lakers were in kind of this urgent playoff mode, you know, so much earlier than, you know, than the actual playoffs. LeBron's first year, if you remember when LeBron came back from his groin injury, the Lakers were still kind of within range of a playoff spot. And you remember LeBron coming back and saying, like, you know, it's about to be different. Like, I'm going to have to turn it up a little earlier than I normally do. And then that didn't work. But I do feel like the Lakers are at risk of being in the same position where they're going to have to, you know, be in this, you know, playoff-like mentality, you know, like in January. Yeah. And, like, that is not what you want for a team that has an average age of like 47. It just is not ideal. And granted, you know, like, and what do players always say? Well, nobody's going to feel sorry for us. Still got to go out. You play the hand you're dealt. And, you know, the Lakers, because they have LeBron, because they have, you know, such talent on this team, and, you know, guys have won before, you kind of always give them you always kind of have a certain level of trust with them and with LeBron to be able to figure it out and kind of pull the rabbit out of the hat. But you just want to put yourself in the best position to have, you know, outs, I guess. And the margins just get thinner when you have a start like this. So to your point, yes, need LeBron back and need to be winning games. You don't want to come home from this road trip below 500, especially if LeBron plays in 4 of the games.
Yeah. Do you think LeBron plays on Friday? Gun to your head.
That's a tough one. I know ESPN reported, you know, 50-50.
Yeah, the comment to us walking through the hallway.
When we saw him last night, he said, we'll see, which doesn't mean much. I would probably...
He kind of had a smirk on his face. Like,
I kind of think he does. I don't think you kind of start building the hype machine as early as you do, as they did, unless you're going to do it. But I feel like also we've, you know, covered the most injured version of LeBron, right, through these 4 years. And so there have been some of these moments where these return to play buildups. And I feel like there have been some false starts because that. And especially because of the nature of this injury, it is something that could so easily be re-injured. You just want to be 100% sure. And, you know, if something doesn't feel a little bit right, you know, they're going to have, an optional shoot around tomorrow. I'm sure LeBron is going to be getting in that work to see how he feels and make sure that he is in the right place physically to go. Because that injury, if it becomes worse, can become a longer term injury. He's already at 2 weeks missed. To answer your question in the longest possible way, I would guess he'll play. I'm anticipating him playing, but I wouldn't be surprised if caution won out.
If I'm not mistaken, last season... There was a week or week and a half before he ultimately returned that it had been reported. I want to say there was an earlier timetable that he was maybe going to come back, and then he didn't end up coming back. I'd have to go back and
definitely could be. I don't remember specifically if that was the case, but
I feel like it was around a week or so.
It's something that you have to be sure. And while we are talking about the urgency and like can't lose games and all that, I think the even bigger thing though is you can't be blinded by that urgency and make a decision that puts LeBron at risk of missing a longer stretch of time, because then that does doom the season. So that's where that decision is just really is really nuanced.
Because going back to last season, we all picked the Lakers to beat the Suns.
Sure.
In the first round, and I think had that happened, maybe we're talking about the Lakers in the finals, or at least the conference finals, with the way that the bracket played out. So I mean, to your point, like the Lakers don't have a shot without, like, if this team doesn't have LeBron, they're losing in the first round.
No,
I would pick, you know, I don't know a West team I would pick them over.
Right. That's just the reality. And like, I think, you know, everyone understands that. That is the importance of LeBron. Like he is the sun. And everything else is, you know, the
solar system,
the clouds, the birds in the sky. Like, I mean, it's... one thing that came up last night, Frank Vogel was apoplectic, I would say.
That's a good word.
If I could say it correctly, apoplectic, we'll take this out in post. We don't do post. If you made it this far in the podcast, you've got it. Frank was upset because Anthony Davis shot zero free throws. Yeah. And there was one very obvious play where, you know, AD was on the break and Giannis looked like he hammered him. AD took a knee to the hip that was bothering him in the second half. He was really having a hard time running. And you pulled up some numbers last night that are in the story from last night about, you know, LeBron is shooting the fewest free throws of his career. Russ is shooting the fewest free throws of his career. And Anthony Davis shooting the second fewest free throws of his career. So, you know, trying to put some context around, like, you know, the anecdotal evidence from a single game. Here's my like counter to all that. Okay. Like, especially with Russ and LeBron, not a counter to your stats, but counter to like that the Lakers are getting hosed. Russ and LeBron are shooting way more jump shots as they get older.
Mm-hmm.
And Anthony Davis, despite being a dominant, imposing, you know, physical force, still shoots more than half of his shots as jump shots. And it's like, that's not where fouls are happening. Like, it's not like he's putting pressure on officials but it's like he's not a guy who's at the rim every single time down the court. And I wonder if some of that is, you know, does he need to be more assertive? Does he need... Of course, the answer is yes. Like, if you want more foul calls, put yourself in a position to get more foul calls.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up right now.
51.9% of his shots have been jumpers this year.
LeBron's average shot distance is 14.6 feet, which is the furthest of his career.
Okay.
Russ is at 12.4, which he's had a few seasons a little bit further than that. Okay. But we know he's reduced the threes, even if...
Yes, that's true.
For my liking, I would like it to go down a little more. And then 80... pulling this up on Basketball Reference, he's at 9.8 feet. He's had several seasons more than that. So, I mean, I think it's more of an issue with LeBron, where I've noticed this since covering the team. I feel like LeBron gets hacked on almost every drive, and I know sometimes he sells it, and that, you know, he kind of has that reputation among non-LeBron fans, but I do
think the haters.
But I think he also deals with a lot of contact on drives that, because of his size and strength and power, you know, similar to, say, I mean, not to the extent of Shaq, but similar to a Shaq, doesn't necessarily get the same level of calls that you probably should. I found Russ. It feels like five times a game, Russ will drive to the rim, miss a layup, as you aforementioned, and complain to the ref that he was fouled. And I think sometimes it's just he missed the layup and he's kind of, you know, you miss a shot, you say you were fouled. But some of it is legitimate. So I personally do think that there is something to the Lakers complaining about the foul calls. I think that to have LeBron, AD, and Russ, three guys who are not only stars, but stars because of what they've done in the paint and their ability to get to the rim and finish. Yes, there are some spacing issues. And I think going with the two bigs force LeBron and Russ and AD to all be jump shooters and play more in the perimeter. But I do think that they've had this gripe now for multiple. I mean, how many technical fouls has this team gotten because of either a foul call or against them or a no call? And, you know, part of that is just their composure and you know, kind of balancing that. But I do think they've been frustrated with the officiating all season. Frank said after the game, you know, we always send clips to the league that they usually do a good job with that. We're going to be sending that Giannis clip to the league. So, and I don't, I mean, we're not putting this all like, there are bigger problems here.
Jovan thinks the refs are the reason the Lakers are 8-8.
They're bigger problems.
Sliding in the West.
That's what one commenter said. But
don't read the comments.
I try not to, but there are bigger problems here, but I do think that it has been a factor in some close games where, you know, they've dealt with foul trouble on their end. And I think they haven't gotten to the free throw line as much as they'd like. So I think that's something to look for, kind of bigger picture, is now with the smaller group, we can see the splits. You know, we'll look at Dwight on the floor and DJ on the floor versus 80 at the five. Yeah. What's the Lakers free throw rate? And I think that's something to monitor moving forward. Yeah. But we've gone long enough here. This was fun.
Gotta get some chowder.
Yeah,
chowder and a chowder. Lobster roll. Gotta get to my own hotel. I'm not staying in the fancy high rise in Back Bay. I've got to get over to like Southie and to check into my Fairfield Inn.
Well,
continental breakfast at the Fairfield Inn.
For Bill, I'm Jovan. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll be back next week. Talk to you then.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.